is over.
The suspect in the kidnapping of a Wisconsin teenager and murder of her parents is due to make his initial court appearance on Monday. Barron County Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald comments on the pending charges against Jake Patterson.
The suspect will make his initial appearance in Barron County Circuit Court to be formally charged with two counts of first-degree intentional homicide and one count of kidnapping.
This is USA Radio News.
This is a national health alert from the Healthcare Hotline. Are you on Medicare and or have private insurance and suffer from back pain? MD Topical has a solution for you. Today, you can qualify to receive a pain-relieving treatment, such as a comfortable back brace or a customized pain treatment at little or no cost. Call MD Topical toll-free now, 877-875-5909. It just takes a couple of minutes to qualify for these amazing treatments that have helped thousands of people with severe pain. Your personalized pain treatment will be delivered directly to your door. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com and get started on your road to a pain-free life. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com.
The CDC is predicting a spike in flu cases before the month ends. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports from Washington.
Latest data from the Centers for Disease Control shows high numbers of influenza cases in New York City, as well as 19 states. The CDC describing flu activity as widespread, with the highest hospitalization rates among young children. The hardest hit states are mainly in the South and along the Gulf Coast. Doctors say it's still not too late to get a flu shot, though. The flu season can last well into spring. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
With the partial government shutdown continuing, about 800,000 federal employees are not getting paid today. Republican Senator Shelley Capito says this isn't good that folks aren't getting paid.
We have prison guards in Meyer. We have federal prison guards I'm very concerned about. Obviously, a lot of people live in paycheck to paycheck. That is going to, I think, put additional pressure on everybody.
And at midnight tonight, this will become the longest shutdown in American history. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
The first four states to legalize marijuana for recreational use were Colorado and Washington in 2014 and Alaska and Oregon in 2015. Just because it's legal, though, doesn't mean your employer approves of it. I had a chance to sit down and chat with Alex Berenson. He's author of the book Tell Your Children, The Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. And one of the things I asked him is some of the issues that employers are having regarding marijuana.
So no surprise, a lot of employers don't want to deal with their employees using marijuana. And so this has actually been a very contentious issue around employment law, but it's clear that this is, you know, this has just set up a whole bunch of court fights where people say, well, I need it medically. And the employer says, you know, we don't want you using this. And they, you know, and there are sort of long drawn out battles about whether it's okay or not.
Berenson continues about the main message in his book.
The focus of my book is really on marijuana's link to severe mental illness, especially psychosis, and the link to violence that psychosis produces. And so, the reason the book is called Tell Your Children is I want parents to be able to know that this stuff is so much stronger than it was when they used it. It really is. The patterns of use have changed. And when you use potent cannabis or pure THC in your adolescence, that's a bad thing for your brain.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
and this so-called temporary shutdown of the government. I'm just so sick of seeing anyone try to justify the fact that there is a shutdown of the government and all of these people, and all these people aren't getting paid. And of course, I don't understand why our dear president, since he said Mexico is going to pay for the government, pay for the wall, why all of a sudden he's not talking about that. But in any event, quickly to tell you about the weather, it's going to be cold this weekend, and forecast is actually now I'm getting a somewhat different weather report saying there could be hazardous weather conditions, and I guess that's although tonight mostly clear, very low, 15 degrees, so bundle up, increasing clouds tomorrow, and then there's still the prediction of 60% prediction of snow likely on Saturday night. Again, very cold, so at least it will be snow. It won't be a mixture, or should not be a mixture, of rain. And if you're out on Saturday night, the snow is likely mainly after 1 a.m. So that most people will be home snug in bed. The slight chance of snow on Sunday is before 1 p.m., cloudy, and then gradually becoming mostly sunny on Sunday. By Sunday night, partly cloudy. Monday should be sunny. Monday night, mostly clear. And Tuesday, sunny with a warming trend, almost 40%. So we're back here now, Bill Wolfson and I. We're sorry to say that our third compadre here, or third sports guy, John Manfreda, is ill. He's not just taken to his bed because of what's happened this year with the Giants. And, of course, I'm in deep mourning because of my Packers, although the big news now is the new Packer coach, LaFleur. And but we have a lot from Bill, who's Eagles. I guess we should talk about and start talking about what their chance is. And, of course, we should also talk about the game with last weekend with Chicago. I think that almost uniformly the prediction was that Chicago would win that game. One question I had is how were the Eagles able to contain Mac? I mean, they really did a good job, he wasn't the factor that everybody thought he would be in that game.
Good afternoon, Pat, and good afternoon, Hunterdon County. It's Bill Wolfson, and not only am I happy that the Eagles survived the Bears, but I'm happy that the Flyers didn't lose last night on the ice to the Dallas Stars. They managed to win 2-1. They came close to losing the game when Dallas scored in the third period, but somehow they survived a flurry of shots in the last 2 minutes and managed to stay, become winners once again. So let's hope this is a trend, although they sound like they're going to tank for a draft choice. At least it has that smell. I don't like that in hockey or in any other sport. But let's talk about the Eagles, and the way they contained Trevon Mack was interesting. First of all, nobody gets rid of the ball faster than Nick Foles, and he knew the Eagles were not having a good running game, so he was forced to pass. However, the O-line has never played quite so well as it played against the Chicago Bears last Sunday afternoon.
And you know what? That was really a fun game to watch.
Because it was even such a defensive battle.
Yeah, and even if you're not a fan, and of course I'm not a fan of either team, I had to root for the Eagles because my grandchildren... Two of
Not
them
because
are
of me, your grandchildren. Okay.
Two of my grandchildren are, diehard Eagle fans, and because frankly, although the Bears are a huge rival to the Packers, I still like the team, and I was actually predicted after the first game that they played with the Packers that the Bears could easily come out on top of the division because it was just apparent how well they were playing, And although they lost to the Packers, I believe they were ahead at one point at the 20-0. So
that's true. But, you know, the way to contain a guy like Khalil Mack is get rid of the ball fast and make sure your O-line is playing very, very well, which the Eagles' O-line was. Remember, this is a very different team than the team that lost 47-7 to New Orleans in Week 11 back in November. The real concern that I think all the Eagles fans have to have is that the running game is not what we like it to be. Wendell Smallwood's healthy, finally. Yeah is no longer an Eagle, as everyone knows, from last year, though I enjoyed watching him. And, you know, we have tight ends who can really grab a ball. But I must tell you, on that kick, my heart was in my throat. And kudos
the first one or the second one? You know, there's been a lot of talk.
Remember, he made the first one.
He did make the first one.
Which well, is why it was smart that they called that timeout just as the ball was before the ball was snapped.
Well, in fact, it was funny because my grandson Tommy, who's a huge Eagle fan, you know, basically said when they called the timeout, oh, why are they bothering to do it? They'll make it on the next time. And, of course, they didn't. And as we all know, anybody who's watched these games over the years knows that the team that's behind and will win if the field goal is not made usually calls a timeout. If they have a timeout, they call it because they want to rattle the kicker.
That's right. And here in this case, I think the ball was on target, but Jervon Hester, who probably still has a bruise under his, on his hand, managed to get a hand on the ball.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that.
Yeah,
you mean to say on that
kick? Jervon Hester actually managed to tip the ball. He got a hand on the ball. If you watch the play carefully, when Cody Parkey put his foot into the ball, Trevon was already at making his leap and managed to get his hand up. And when he was interviewed, he knew immediately he had deflected the kick. We didn't know by how much because he felt the sensation of the ball brushing against the three middle fingers on his left hand. It grazed his fingertips. And he's somewhat overwhelmed. He's a pickup player from midseason. Halati and Agata had pushed forward, and together they pushed their hands up, and the kick just so happened to touch Hester's fingers. Nobody really knows how he managed to get lucky, but, you know, he was a practice squad guy, but he's 6'3". He can really jump. And it paid off this time. And he's a great story about him in Philly.com. It's worth checking out. He's a defensive tackle, but he's been with the Rams. He's gotten cut. He had a full scholarship at Pitt. He had a tough path getting into Pitt. And
in other words, he's not too smart.
Not a question of not too smart, but you know, he lost his father while he was 16 to cancer. He had been drafted by the Raiders in 17. They waived him, and the Eagles signed him to the practice squad and put him on the roster in October. And he basically sat on the bench. He was one of the extra defensive players. And when he turned to track the flight of the ball, he couldn't quite see it. His big fear was he had not gotten enough of it to keep it from going through the uprights. He turned around. He never saw the ball hit the left upright and then hit the crossbar.
Yeah, wasn't that amazing?
Back into the field. That was astonishing.
I mean, it could have been hit the upright, hit the crossbar, and then go in.
Yeah, which would have been 3 points, and the Bears would be playing the Rams.
That's right.
But he never saw the, as they're calling it, the double doink. The ball's carom off the left upright and off the crossbar, but he heard the crowd go sudden and completely silent.
And that, of course, since they were playing a home game in Chicago, I think they were stunned. I think they couldn't believe it. But it really was a good game. I mean, it was not a one-sided game.
I will tell you, I am critical of the Eagles' play calling on their last drive. Foles has the ball at the 10. Then he has the ball at the 2. First down on the 2, goal to go. First play, he hands it to Wendell Smallwood, who's 5'8". Certainly can squirt through all the little holes, but he hits the fleshy avalanche of the Chicago Bears front defensive line and linebackers. And he tries, and he is bounced back. No gain, no loss. Second down, same play. Third down, same play. Now it's fourth down. Who knows what's going to happen? The Eagles are behind. So the ball is snapped from the shotgun. Foles delivers it to Golden Tate, standing with about 6 inches between his toes and the end zone. He's standing in the end zone, and the ball is caught right at the corner. Eagles go up, and now they try to get 2 points. And they can't. They try to
right.
run it in, and they can't.
No, I know.
But they called the same play with Wendell Smallwood, and it made no sense. What I would have done, I was begging for the Philly special. Everybody. I thought Foles would take it from the shotgun, hand it to Smallwood, and Foles would run right, and Smallwood would run left with a couple of tackles pulling. But he could get in there for 2, because then a field goal would have only
That's right.
tied the game.
That's right.
So now it's...
Yeah, and I think everybody thought, after they didn't make that 2-point conversion, I think everybody thought, that's it.
Up by 1, it's 15. It's 16-15.
Yep. That's right.
And I turned and I said to my wife, I don't think the Eagles are going to win this game. The defense is not going to hold them. They've got to hope either for a turnover or an interception. And she looked at me and said those immortal words of non-football lovers everywhere. So if they win, what do you get? And I said to myself, I'll show her.
Well, I can tell you, my husband didn't say that. But, you know, the other thing that was, to me, pretty amazing is that it was such a fun game to watch, even though it had such a low score. I mean, usually low-scoring games are, they're kind of not that much fun, unless your team happens to be in the game. But
I quite agree. I enjoy defensive play. I enjoy the line play tremendously, and I don't think the line play gets enough attention. You see these big, huge guys, but now they're not just big and huge. They're big, huge, and fast.
Yeah, that's what's so amazing. I mean, in the old days, you never thought that the refrigerator would be able to move more than, be able to put his big body in front of somebody. But, I think there was one time, if I recall a game years ago, where he ran and did a pretty good job of it, but probably collapsed after the run. But that was not something that you expected these big, 300-pound guys to do.
Yeah, no question about it, Pat.
So did you watch, what I thought was really such a runaway was the national championship. I mean, we watched about the first half, went into the third quarter.
Clemson just
ran away with that game. I mean, Alabama, looked like they didn't show up. And yet now I did hear that apparently 4 of the Alabama players are going to go into the draft.
That's interesting, because I did not see the national championship game. I was otherwise occupied that evening with work. And so I have to tell you that I did not see it. And I'm kind of not a fan of either team. I kind of like Alabama and that whole Southeast Conference craziness that they...
No, I don't like Alabama.
That they go through.
And one of the things, and I don't follow college football. I follow Big Ten to some extent. But remember, Clemson, you know, demolished Notre Dame. They demolished Ohio State. But I believe, if I recall, there were a number of players on their team last year that all decided to come back to play this last year. And they must have really respected the coach, and that, to me, was really something, that they could have gone into the draft and they didn't. They came back, and we all know that, you know, somebody can get hurt their final year of college football. But it just seemed to me that, you know, I would have liked to have sat in that Clemson, you know, and heard some of what goes on in their locker room, because it just seemed like they were such a cohesive team. Granted, they all want to showcase, but they also seemed to be a team that wanted to totally showcase their team.
What was surprising to me is that Alabama did not show up to play. They made a lot of mistakes. There were a lot of what I call unforced errors. I watched some of the highlights, and it looked like they were sleepwalking through that game. And I was kind of surprised. You think an inspiring coach like Saban would have fired up the team for the second half, because you got to wonder what was said in that locker room.
I have to tell you, as I said, it got to the point that we didn't even watch the, you know, the final of the game. But in any event, I think that now the Eagles, of course, are playing the Saints on Sunday. They're underdogs, but I think that's going to be an awesome matchup.
I'm looking forward to the game, but, you know, as much as an Eagle fan that I have, it's real tough to bet against Drew Brees.
Even yes,
it
is.
A betting guy. And, you know, I'm hoping the outcome is in doubt until the last second. Remember, this is not the Eagles of November. These are the Eagles of January. Nick Foles is riding a hot hand, but you never know. The one interesting thing about this game is going to be that New Orleans does not have a great running game, and despite the fact that they were 13-3, their pass defense looks a little suspect to me. You know, they've had a bye week. Drew Brees has had 2 weeks to sleep off whatever rust or difficulty he's had.
But sometimes that, I've heard that could be a double-edged sword. That sometimes
with a professional like Drew Brees, I don't account much for that. That's a chance to get rid of the aches and pains. But go ahead.
That's true. No, no. I've just heard that some people will say that. You know, for some players, they don't need an extra week, and it's not helpful to them. But I think the other thing, of course, in my family, we have both Eagle fans and we have Cowboy fans, unfortunately. But I think that's going to be a very interesting game between the Cowboys and, you know, the Rams, because, you know, Dak Prescott seems to be doing better. And, you know, I think it's going to be a game where we look at the two quarterbacks and the two running backs, Elliott and Gurley. And, of course, Elliott is just been, he's phenomenal this year.
I mean, oh, he's got all the moves.
I mean, he, as I recall, and I think this is correct, you know, he, you know, the only year that he has not been the leading running back is the year where he was out for six games. As I think that's true, and I think he had, you know, 32 catches 2 years ago, 26 catches last year, and 77 catches this year.
Well, he's a heck of a player. There's no question about that. You know, the interesting thing to me is that I think the Cowboys beat the Rams. I think the Rams can do a lot of damage against the the Cowboys do a lot of damage against the so-so Rams defense. Maybe it'll be 28-24 kind of game where the Cowboys win, but I just have a bad feeling at that.
Well, also, Goff, their quarterback, really started out the game, I'm seeing the season, really well, and then apparently he's slumped to, you know, about the 25th rating. So he's, you know, it's almost been that reverse that, again, the Cowboys seem to be hot now.
Well, the Cowboys started slow and then warmed up. The interesting thing to me is you've got Dak Prescott as a great player. And
well, you know, I never thought he was a great player, but I think he's gotten better.
He gets better every week.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a true assessment that, you know, he comes in and at the beginning of the year, you know, you always think about, you know, when he came in, what was that, 2-3 years ago, and he just seemed like the hottest thing going, and then really seemed
he tailed
to cool
off.
Off.
Once people got wise to the way he was playing and realized that he held onto the ball a little bit longer than perhaps he should have, and he didn't have the O-line that he needed or somebody to throw to like Cooper, they managed to get him to make a lot of forced throws that were picked off or tipped. Additionally, Prescott now has learned that there's going to be times where he has to eat the ball and take off and then slide, whereas before he tried to force a pass or he would just try to make the play on his own and then not slide. But once he figured out how he was expected to play and you know, kind of grew into what the defense gave him and learned that a little better. I thought that he's improved. This is a guy who improves every week as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I don't know what's the over-under on that game because
I don't know.
I would if the...
They're calling it under 47.5. And I don't know. I'm sorry. Over 49.5. Pardon me. But, you know, it's an interesting game.
Who do they predict will win?
Action in the New York Post is it's going to be Rams 28, Cowboys 24. I think it's going exactly the other way. I think
yeah,
the Cowboys
I do too.
Win.
And, you know, what are the point? What is the point spread on that one?
Oh,
that should
geez.
Be almost even.
Cowboys 7 over the Rams. And
no, it can't be.
That's what I'm reading right
well,
here.
Well, not if they predict the Rams to win.
Well, you never know in this. I'm looking at this in black and white. Cowboys given 7 over the Rams. I'm not a betting guy.
Oh, so then they're saying that the Cowboys are going to win.
Well,
if they say it's going to be 7 over the Rams.
Well,
I thought the Rams.
I'm not sure how that works. I'm not a betting guy.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Well, that should be, and of course that game is going to be played Saturday night, so it'll have a big following.
Right. I remember that the kickoff for that game, I think, is 7 o'clock or is it 4?
No, I think it's about 8:15. That's a Saturday night game.
Because
the Saturday afternoon game
is
Colts.
Chiefs. I think
Chiefs Colts
play a home game.
They do?
Yeah, I think they do. The Colts have won 10 of their past 11, and the Chiefs were on a 6-game skid before they crushed the Raiders in the last game. So I think that this is going to be decided by less than a touchdown. I think the Chiefs win 34-30.
Well, I'd like to see the Chiefs win only because
of
Andy.
I'm an Andy Reid fan.
I'm an Andy Reid fan
and
also.
I like Mahomes.
And Mahomes is, I mean, he's really... Hot. I think somebody compared him to a young Brett Favre.
Yeah, this is his first playoff start. Remember, the Chiefs had a bye week.
Right.
They're coming off a bye week. They're not banged up. At least if they are, they're getting better. Everything stopped hurting. But, you know, I think the Colts are a flash in the pan. As much as I
do
think,
you really?
Yeah, I think Andrew – I'm not crazy about Andrew Luck as a quarterback. I've seen him hit the fan many, many times and get rattled.
Well, I don't think they're a flash in the pan, but I still have to take Kansas City, and mainly because, you know, we're both Andy Reid fans, and it would be nice for Andy to go all the way. What can I tell you? And, of course, the Chargers-Patriot game is Sunday at 1:05 p.m. And, you know, I have to say,
I'm rooting for the Chargers.
Isn't everyone? I mean, I think the Patriots have been in the playoffs, what, for nine seasons straight? I mean, you know, and they always seem to be able to pull it out. Brady always is able to pull it out. But I have a feeling that, you know, nine-tenths of the country is, you know, we're all going to be rating, I'm sorry, we're all going to be rooting for the Chargers. And it would be nice to see that happen. And, of course, what would really be interesting in my family is if both the Cowboys and the Eagles win this weekend.
Well, if the Cowboys and the Eagles win, now you have every Eagle fan's fantasy beating the Cowboys in the playoffs.
And every Cowboys fan, the same fantasy. I mean, can you imagine? And, of course, in my own family, I think we'll have to separate the Cowboy fans from the Eagles fans. Not just separate rooms. It might have to be
separate houses.
Separate houses
and
or even
wire.
Separate, you know, separate towns.
And
I mean,
guards with cattle prods.
You cannot believe the, you know, the rivalry. And, in fact, last year, my Cowboy fan grandson was not rooting for the Eagles in the Super Bowl, which I thought was kind of nasty in light of the fact that his brother is a diehard fan, but he could not bring himself to root for the Eagles.
Well, just because of that attitude, maybe they deserve to get their brains beat in by the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl sooner rather than later. But let's hope not.
Well,
besides,
what do you,
Pat, you know,
what do you have to say about these new coaches? You know, we've had
We'll get there. We'll get there in a minute.
All right.
I need to say a few things.
All right. Then we'll take some commercials.
I think the Patriots are the low-hanging fruit in this weekend. Because look at this. Although they crushed the New York Jets in the finality.
Well, come on.
Give me a break. Everybody knew that was going to happen. But they lost on a miracle play by the Dolphins. They made a gazillion mistakes in a loss in Pittsburgh, and they almost lost to the Bills. So they don't have the sustained firepower they've had for years. And, you know, you don't necessarily want to bet the house against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, particularly at home in the playoffs. Sometimes you got to go with your gut. So some smart guys are saying Chargers 23, Patriots 21. Wouldn't surprise me. I think that's the way it turns out. But, you know, the Patriots are, I think, ripe for the plucking. I think they hit the wall last year, although they did have another good season this year. They're not the Patriots of two or three years ago, and I think that we're going to see the New England Patriots going home early this winter. But, Pat, you wanted to talk further, and
Let's play some spots, and then we'll get back. And I think you probably know more about all of these coordinators and coaches who were up for these jobs. I mean, eight coaches, which is, you know, maybe I don't follow it, but it seems to me that that's a lot in 1 year. I thought it was very interesting that the Jets did not hire McCarthy. From what I'd heard, that was the only team McCarthy wanted to go to as far as coaching.
I'm surprised to hear that because New York's a tough place to play and an even tougher place to coach. I was surprised that the Jets picked up Adam Gase off the Dolphins because he's a good quarterback coach, but let's talk about that after the spot.
Yep, we will.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce. Building business, one business at a time.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hey, Big C here, doing a little practicing for the Hunterdon County Chamber's 16th Annual Golf Classic. We're teeing off at Tuesday, October 3rd at Hawk Point Golf Club. The signature sponsor this year is Hunterdon Healthcare. Besides enjoying a great game of golf, this event is an excellent way for you to promote your business via our sponsorship opportunities, silent auction, and networking luncheon.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Well, Bill, let's talk a little bit. I don't know much of anything about Matt LaFleur, who's been hired by the Packers, other than, I realize that I've been practicing law from before he was born.
Well, that's astonishing. Yeah. I could say that about most of our coaches, too.
No, there are a lot of – well, the interesting thing that I've heard is that with some of these young coaches, they're going to try to get a lot of experienced coordinators and others – because some of these guys are really young. But anyway,
Look at Sean Payton. He's 36 or 37. He's the Saints coach.
Well, this guy he's going to be 40 in November of this year. I mean, he's 39 years old. you know, he spent time as a quarterback's coach of the Washington Redskins and Atlantic Falcons, and then was, of course, the offensive coordinator for the L.A. Rams, and then most recently with the Tennessee Titans. As far as college, I mean, he went, and I shouldn't say this, deprecating Saginaw Valley State College. I mean, I know he was born in Michigan, but, well, I mean, Saginaw Valley State, he played, he was a coach, he was the offensive assistant at Saginaw Valley State. He was a coach at Central Michigan, and he was an offensive assistant there. He went to Northern Michigan as a quarterback's coach and wide receiver's coach. He went to Ashland, I don't even know if that's college, frankly, as an offensive coordinator. And then he was with the Texans for a year as the offensive quality control coach. So, I mean, he's moved around. He was with the Redskins for 3 years and their quarterback coach. And I guess what I'm wondering, Redskins quarterback coach, Notre Dame quarterback's coach, Falcons quarterback coach. That's interesting to what extent that was important in selecting a coach for Green Bay. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is, people say, well, maybe he's in the second half of his career. I think he's been frustrated, obviously. But I wonder, how much they were trying to get somebody who could work with Aaron. And, of course, he's also been offensive coordinator now for the past 2 years with the Rams and with the Titans. So, I don't know enough about that selection process. I think it was a surprise.
I think it was a surprise, too. I mean, LaFleur certainly has a good resume. I had not heard his name before the Packers named him the new head coach. But, I think Green Bay was in a position where a new broom had to sweep clean, because you have an aging Clay Matthews. You have a number of Packers who have been let go or traded away, like Jordy Nelson or Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. People who I thought were mainstays. So I think the Packers may be in a brief decline, and bringing in a new coach after the season that they had, where they were not a 500 team and did not impress, is a necessity. I think also that the Packers are going to have to look to pick up, either in a draft or in free agency, a couple of talented receivers, and I think they're going to also have to look to how are they going to protect Aaron Rodgers and give him time to throw or do what he does best, which is to play option, I think. Guy with a great arm, great football sense. How can they allow him to get pounded into the ground week after week like they had been in the beginning of the season? I was very disappointed in the Green Bay-Minnesota game. Rodgers looked like he was extremely frustrated. There were a lot of drops in that game. I did not understand why there were so many problems. And they didn't really look all that terrific against the Jets either at the end of the season. Now, granted, that was sort of a meaningless December 23rd game. 2 days before Christmas, it wasn't particularly fun to watch. Everybody knew this was Todd Bowles' next to last game, and Bowles has since been hired, I think, out in L.A. The problem with Green Bay, I think, is they really need to rebuild their offense and give Rodgers some weapons. The running game hasn't been exciting. And I love running in football. I think that with the West Coast offense, which is really pass heavy and pass dominant.
But I think almost all the teams are, it's a passing game. In fact, I know that Green Bay struggled because they didn't have good runners for a long time. But again, I get back to LaFleur, and I'm sure that one of the things that, you know, they were really looking for is someone who had experience with the as a quarterback coach. And the other thing that I thought was interesting, and I found out recently, well, obviously recently, he was just hired recently, but apparently with the Titans, he had the opportunity of calling plays for the Titans.
Yeah, and that's important.
I think that's really significant.
Yeah. It is. And remember something. The Titans played a decent running game and had a decent O-line when he was there. The one thing that I'm convinced of is that you're in Green Bay. It's definitely a cold weather town. You're playing outdoors. You've got a great passer in Rodgers, of course. But, you know, a cold weather, smash mouth running game is what will open the field up so that Rodgers can use his talent. And they certainly need somebody with the talents, if not the attitude, of a guy like Antonio Brown, who Pittsburgh can't wait to dump.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing, and who knows if this played a factor, but he's from Michigan. That Midwestern, you know,
work ethic,
football. He was, of course, a starting quarterback at Saginaw Valley State, which is, you know, a Division II. But he guided the team to division playoffs every season. And I think apparently his brother is also in football. The Michigan, grew up in Michigan. That will sit well with the Packer fans because he'll understand the Packer fans. And I think there's a lot to be said. I mean, I think Green Bay is a very unique football town.
Oh, it's the one small market town with the big market team and fans who are beyond passionate.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Beyond passionate. You have only to go to Green Bay to see all the guys with the cheese heads and the raccoon skins, coonskin hats and things like that.
And every kid wearing a Packer jacket to...
Yeah.
to